show.
Great. Hi, guys. I'm Madison. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is April 8th, 2012. How does this start? So I grew up in an alcoholic home. I by no means think that that made me an alcoholic or, you know, is to blame, but that's a part of my story. I have to constantly remind myself that because for so long I victimized myself by that. When I was 13, my mom died of alcoholism, and at that point, you know, I think that I've always been an alcoholic. I saw it as an opportunity to be off to the races, and I was from the beginning. I was free at last, and, you know, it started off because growing up in high school, I was just extremely scared of everything. I would never have been able to get in front of this group. My face would get bright red and I would just be, you know, just, oh, you know, I couldn't do it. And even just in class, like ask me something to a math question. And so I drank initially to get over that fear, the fear of people, of what you thought of me, of, you know, all the things that come along with that. And then it became more necessary. Every morning, every day, I remember waking up and just having that emptiness, that ache that I know we can all relate to. And just thinking, you know, I was just like riding this wave of life and it was so scary and I had no idea where I was going. And so I just decided, it wasn't really a decision, but I didn't go anywhere. And I, you know, at some point, my little brother saw me doing certain things that we do when we're in our alcoholism that aren't pretty. And thankfully, he told my family. And now that he's sober and due to rigorous honesty, he was like, I was not trying to help you. I was trying to get the heat off my back. And I was like, oh, well, it was a nice thought. You know, you helped me in the end. And so I ended up going to my first rehab. I was asked to go the night of my intervention. I had the whole shebang, you know, family members flying in from across the country, the crying, the letters, the whole deal. I had it. And I was like, you know, okay, fine. But what really did it for me was, you know, when my dad and my youngest brother came and they were like, you know, where you're going, you know, there were no words, really. I can't remember. I was so messed up. I can't even make anything up right now. So, and I was sitting there, and all I could think about as my family was pleading with me was my next drink. I was just like, I've got to numb this. This feeling right now, this has got to go away. And so there was no way in hell I was going to go with them. You know, I went back in, and I did my thing. And so that, to me, was complete powerlessness. And, so I said yes to rehab. I left that night. I had no idea what I was getting myself into. And, you know, I went to a rehab that was based on therapy, which for me didn't work in staying sober. But however, I did learn a lot about myself and a lot of other issues that I have. I know this is a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, but for me, it has been so helpful to see other women that have issues with food and the image they have of themselves, and to see that through working the 12 steps and being honest with another alcoholic, that you can recover no matter how many issues you have, you know, so it can apply to anything. And so I learned a lot about that, and I've been able to get better in that way. So I relapsed, and I have an uncle who is 17 years sober, and he decided that he was going to fly me out to San Diego. I'm like, what the hell are you thinking, dude? This is like a barely 22-year-old girl that you've decided to fly to California, out of your mind. And so he did, and, you know, I didn't exactly want to go to the meetings. I don't want to wake up at 6 a.m. to go to a meeting, but I did it. And that was something that was way bigger than me. That's not what I do. I do not wake up at 6 a.m. and do what you tell me to do. Like, I purposefully run away from things. So And then another thing that happened that I cannot explain is I went to a meeting and I walked up to this woman. I didn't know what I wanted at the time. She didn't have anything I wanted because I didn't know what I wanted. And I was just like, a sponsor? Like, and she was like, do you need a temporary sponsor? I was like, yes. And so I built a relationship with this woman. And the first thing that I did was I went on a walk with her. And we focused on the unmanageability aspect. And that was my step one, you know. And for me, growing up Southern Baptist, it was a really big deal. God, like that word, I was like, oh. And so I made a really simple list. Like, what is God? What is my higher power to me? What is my higher power not? And then step two. Step three was pretty simple as well. I'm in a recovery home, and to follow all the rules, do all those things, and to launch immediately into your fourth step, which was so scary to me. I was just like, I'm one step closer. Oh, my God. You know? And then, but that's where you get freedom, is doing the stuff that's hard. And so then I was honest with another woman, step five. Step six, I was just like, if my character defects are gone, like, how can I let these go? Like, how it says in the, like, the 12 and 12, like, I'm going to be, like, the hole in the donut. You know, I'm going to be nothing. There's nothing of me but bad. Like, how can I let go of these things? But I managed to do it with some guidance from another woman. And then seven, eight. God, reading step eight in the big book in the 12 and 12, my sponsor came back to this very simple thing of breathe, because I just wouldn't breathe. I was like, there's no way I can look these people in the eye that I did this to. Like, there's no way. I can't do this. I'm not strong enough for this. And I did it, and I stayed sober, and the freedom I found from being able to look another woman in the eye was just amazing. And then step 10, that's what keeps me spiritually fit and right today, because without that, you know, and my sponsor always says, like, it's important not only to see what you, who you wronged and what you did bad in the day, but also, what did I do good? What am I going to do tomorrow? And step 11, getting on my knees was a big deal. I was like, I will not do that. Like, that is so stupid. Like, and, but, you know, I, yeah, I know. But then I was like, you know, these women, they said it's working for them. Like, why the hell not? You know, maybe nothing will happen. And nothing did happen immediately. But all I can say is I'm still here. So, and then step 12, I learned that even before I got to step 12, that I could live step 12 in my life just by smiling at somebody before I was at step 12. I could smile, I could open the door for somebody, I could do something that could change their whole day, I don't know, or maybe not, maybe I could just feel a little better. And, the gifts I've been given so far from being sober are just so much bigger than me. I can't even describe them. I couldn't talk about them possibly without crying. And so I just recommend getting a sponsor, being honest with at least one person, working the steps. That's what's worked for me. The same stuff that you hear. Like, don't try to make it new. This has worked for many people before you. So that's just what I try to do. Try not to make it too complicated. And when I was on restriction at my recovery home, I used to get letters. And something that my sponsor sent me that I love, I just try to read it, and I'll end with this, is, life is rich, beauty is everywhere, every personal connection has meaning, and that laughter is life's sweetest creation. Thank you.